जय राधा मदाभा कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा मदाभा कुंज बिहारी। गोपीजन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, गोपीजन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, जमुन तीरवन छारी, वन जमुना तीरा वन चारी, वन जय राधा कुंज बिहारी।
विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य आशुतोत्तर शतशिष्यमाद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य आशुतोत्तर शतशिष्यमाद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इसको फाउंडर आचार्य श्रील प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथरा श्रीमं भागवतम की निताय गौरा परमानंदी। ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी टू शिशि गुरु वंशि गौरंगा। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 द समन बोनन चैप्टर 11 द चाइल्डहुड पास्ट टेंस ऑफ कृष्णा टेक्स्ट 38 टू 40। We'll read 38 now together. Kvachit badayato venum Shepanai shipata kvachit Kvachit badai kikim nibhi Kvachit kriti क्वचित् कृत्रिमगो वृषाय, क्वचित् बाधायतो वेणुम् शिपानाय शिपता क्वचित्, क्वचित् पादाय किं निभिः, क्वचित् कृत्रिमगो वृषाय, क्वचित् बाधायतो वेणुम् शिपानाय शिपता क्वचित्, क्वचित् पादाय किं निभिः, क्वचित् कृति मगो वृषाये. प्लीज चंद. शिपानाय शिपता क्वचित् क्वचित् पादाय किकिन्नी भी क्वचित् क्रीते मगो वृषाये क्वचित् पादाय यतो वेणुम् शिपानाय शिपता क्वचित् क्वचित् पादाय किकिन्नी भी क्वचित् क्रीते मगो वृषाये इंटरनेट जस्ट वेंट ऑफ. And I just went off. What? No, I can't hear. Now I have glasses. I'm going to read 38 and then the word by word. Abidure braja bhuva saha gopala darakai charayam ashatur batsan nana krida parichato. Translation. Not far away from the residential quarters, both Krishna and Balaram, equipped with all kinds of playthings, play with it with other cowherd boys and begin to tend the small calves. Then today's verse, word by word, Kwachit. Sometimes, badayataha, blowing, venum, on the flute, shepanai, with a device of rope for throwing, shipataha, throwing stones to get fruit, kwachit, sometimes, Kwachit padai, sometimes with the legs, kikinnibihi, with the sound of ankle bells, kwachit, sometimes, kriti mago brishai, by becoming artificial cows and bulls. Okay, that's the end of that one. Next verse, text 40. Vrishaja manu nardantau jujudhate parashparam anukritya rutair jantums charatu prakrito jatha. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sometimes Krishna and Balaram will play on their flutes. Sometimes they will throw ropes and stones devised for getting fruits from the trees. Sometimes they will throw only stones and sometimes the ankle bells twinkling. They will play football with fruits like bael and amalaki. Sometimes they will cover themselves with blankets and imitate cows and bulls and fight with one another, roaring loudly, and sometimes they will imitate the voices of animals. In this way they enjoy sporting exactly like two ordinary human children. Purport. Vrindavan is full of peacocks. Kujat kokila hamsa sarasagana kirne majura kule. The Vrindavan forest is always full of cuckoos, ducks, swans, peacocks, cranes, and also monkeys, bulls, and cows. So Krishna and Balaram used to imitate the sounds of these animals and enjoy sporting. Can you turn down number two just a little down, the fader, just a little down, number two. Hare Krishna. Okay, thank you. That's good. Om Gyana Timirandasya Yananjana Shalakaja Chakshur Om Nilitam Yana Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimate Ramapada Swami Iti Namine Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyatyade Satarine Vancha kalpa tarubhyasya kripa sindubhya vacha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha. Oh, it's back. Great. So, it's explained that when Krishna was 3 years old, he moved to Vrindavan. So he spends a period of time in Vrindavan. So far I remember hearing from 3 to 6 he was in Vrindavan, and then 6 years old to 10 years old, or 6 to 11, he was they moved to Nandagram, and then from 11 for 10 years he was in Mathura, and then from 2021 on he stays in Dwarka till the end of his pastimes. Krishna is in this world. So there's a name for each different ages that Krishna has. I can't remember. I was trying to look very quickly, but I couldn't remember exactly what is this. What is this age group in which Krishna is right now? I know Kishore is when he is very small, you know. So that is very young, but I think Kishore is later, when he is more like 6, 7 years old, things like that, I think. But I can't remember this one. But right now, Krishna is very young and is having pastimes just like ordinary childs. And the fact is that that's just how ordinary childs are. Especially when you see children that grows in rural spaces, farming land and, you know, that type of environments. If you had that experience of having your childhood in sort of rural areas, that's exactly how children play. When I was you know, at this children age, we go on vacation. All our vacation was visiting our grandparents who have, you know, one of them, you know, had this small tract of land, and the other one was these little towns that have these jungles, and then there was always what they call the different farmers. They have this little piece of land that they cultivate. They were called in Venezuela conucos. They do the same thing in Colombia, conucos. Conucos is, you know, they're very poor farmers, peasant people, and they just have this little piece of land, much less than an acre. You know, it's like almost like people have houses right now, and they cultivate that, and they have their little hut, and they cultivate that. And so in the jungle or in the forest, there were all these little conucos. And so the children of the neighborhood would just take off into the jungle. And so you have this bunch of children just running wild by themselves. I mean, and from ages maybe 9 years old, 8 years old, 10, 11, just like running wild, no adult. And so there was the particular arrangement: you take breakfast, and then it was, you know, the excitement of just go out and play. And you, they don't have anyone, the adults telling you, don't do that, hey, stop doing it, come on, you know. Just like your friends and out into the fields, you know, and just have fun. So we gather this whole bunch of children, you know, maybe like 8 or 10 of us, and just take off. And you go into this jungle, actually. And as we go to the jungle, like all these noisy children, you know, then you go into, you find these conucos, or these little tracts of lands with these poor farmers. And then we go into, and then this old man will sit down and tell us stories, ghost stories of the jungle. And then all the children will be like all scared. And then you go into the jungle, and somehow or other, one of the children comes out that they see a ghost and really scared. And then we all get scared and run. And sometimes the listening of animals and things, all these things. And that was in one side of my grandparents. The other side was with my aunts. Some of them were younger, like my age, and some other cousins, my brother, we go, and some of the other children of the farm. Then we spend the whole day under the mango tree groves, just eating mangoes. So knocking mangoes out of the tree, like throwing stones. And then, so just like it's described here. And just the whole afternoon eating mangoes. You will take the mango, and then you squish it. Squish it, squish it, squish it, you know, and it becomes very soft, and then take a tip out, and then suck the mango. So suck all the juice of the mango, throw it, the next one, like that. So, so it was this carefree, really, really happy time, just with your friends running free. And thinking about it sometimes now, you marvel that how things were years ago and how things are degrading right now, that if you, I mean, there's no way of you thinking you let your children just go free like that on their own at that age into, you know, on their own somewhere in the, you know, in some space. You just won't allow it because you immediately think how dangerous. But back then, you know, I mean, it's not that my parents were responsible, or my family. They were very nicely taken care. But it was a sense that, you know, as you go through different things, the adults will be looking after the children. So, you know, we passed through different conucos, and, you know, we were offered this yuca bread, cassave, and we offer, you know, some fruits, and, you know, it's like that. It was very safe. Although, one time, we're in the jungle and we hear this big roar that it sounded like, you know, like a big cat. And then there was this stampede of children running like for their life, super scared. So thinking that a tiger was somewhere. And so anyway, ordinary children, this is how ordinary children are. They find ways of playing together. We see here the children that comes to the temple, and they see those blue blocks, and they, here in the temple, they start to play football with those blues, you know, the blocks, the yoga blocks. You find ways of having fun, and especially when you're with your friends, and start to run wild around. So, exactly like ordinary children, which makes Krishna's pastimes very extraordinary and very difficult to understand. Because when we listen to Krishna's pastimes, just like I just did right now, oh, I have that type of experiences. So, you know, Krishna is just like me. And then if you don't have the background or the protection of the instructions of the acharyas, then you can very easily try to understand Krishna from the perspective of your own experience. And that completely pollutes and contaminates the understanding of Krishna's pastimes. So therefore, it remains a mystery for people who are not connected to the disciplic succession or to the parampara. And the fact is that you see people that externally and materially, they are very qualified, and they still cannot understand. What to speak when you go later in the passages when Krishna starts to perform is Madhurya Leelas, or the conjugal Leelas with the gopis and with Shrimati Radharani. Then people lose it because they say, oh yeah, I recognize those feelings, that attraction between male and female. And then you start to relate, so it becomes, is completely takes you away from the understanding of Krishna's position. And that is talking in the level of the conditioned souls. What to speak of greatly elevated personalities when they actually witness the simplicity and the beauty of these human life's pastimes, and they get bewildered, such as Lord Brahma and Lord Indra, that we hear later in these pastimes. Lord Brahma witnessed Krishna killing Agasura, and then he sees him so innocently. It's like, you know, these beautiful children just sitting together taking lunch. Sometimes we see that at children, you know, they're so beautiful, say, and so innocent, you know. Say you see sometimes Braja Leela, she's very beautiful and immediately captivating, you know, how the innocence and the beauty, the purity of that innocence. And, you know, you see, oh, such a beautiful child. It's a child. It's so small and vulnerable. You know, immediately what arises is, I must protect, or I must, you know, this parental type of. You can, you know, it's a vulnerable child. So then you see Lord Brahma seeing all these beautiful childs, you know, how is this the Supreme Personality of Godhead? That is confusing. So he have to test. He have to find out. And Lord Indra, because of pride, he couldn't understand Krishna, you know. He said, this beautiful child, then being very clever and sort of convincing the whole inhabitants of Vrindavan to stop the Indra Yagya. But you know, when we hear the narrations of Krishna talking to Nanda Maharaj and the elders of Vrindavan about the Indra Yagya, questioning and then making his arguments that Indra Yagya, no, we worship Govardhan. It's so charming the way the description is, you know, with Krishna's innocence and Krishna's sort of respect for their parents, but at the same time, you know, making these very convincing arguments. And talking philosophy, sometimes we see, you know, children that are very, very gifted, and they can, you know, speak a little philosophy, and then you get, oh, how wonderful this child is. So he arises, you know, it's not, this is a supreme controller, this is a controller, but this is someone that, you know, I must protect. So Indra became enraged. How is that these people, whose duty is to offer sacrifice to me, that's how the universal order functions. Yagya must be performed. And, you know, you, in order for the rain to be, you have to perform, you have to offer some sacrifice for the pleasure of the demigods. So it's prescribed in the Vedas. That is their duties, and they're stopping their duties. then they must be punished. So, and they are actually disobeying or breaking the law because hearing to an ordinary child, an upstart, he calls Krishna. What is this, you know, like talkative child? And on the top of that, convincing all these irresponsible adults. So, very confusing to understand Krishna's pastimes, because they're human likes, and that's the point. Human like. But thanks to the grace of the Vaishnava Acharyas, then we can understand, which is something quite wonderful, that we have the possibility to understand Krishna's pastimes. This type of understanding is what Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita as Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam, is the king of all education and knowledge, and is the king of all confidential knowledge. So obviously we can understand it's confidential because it has to be, it's a secret that has to be, or it's a confidential knowledge that has to be revealed to you directly. If you don't receive this password or this key, then you have no entrance. And it doesn't matter how highly intelligent materially or qualified you are, you won't be able to enter. And we see that with scholars of, you know, Vedic scholars, that they study the scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and they cannot understand this thing. They have no entrance. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that is, they simply trying to taste the honey by licking at the bottle. There is no sweetness on that. So it's they have no entrance to this confidential knowledge. Even personalities like Gandhi, although he display or he claims to be a devotee of the Bhagavad Gita, in some of his expressions, he showed that he lacked the complete or the full understanding of this confidential knowledge, because he questions Krishna's pursuing or encouraging Arjuna to fight the world. So it's a confidential knowledge that has to be given to us. And that is the whole principle of the Bhagavad Gita, that without this confidential knowledge, without this education, then we cannot experience the actual reality of the soul. That's what this verse, Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam Pavitram Pavan Uttamam. What is it? Dharma Protection. Can remember this line, but is the perfection of religion because you can experience it. You can have a direct experience of the self. A direct experience of the self. So when we receive this type of education, we have access to have, it's experiential because we have the capacity to experience the self. And the fact that as that happens in all levels of this education, many of us, we're still sort of in the beginning stages of this education. And even in the beginning stages of education, you receive an experience of the self, the spiritual self. That is what Krishna calls param drishta nivartante. That devotee Srila Prabhupada translates as the higher taste. So we can receive this higher taste, which is in other religions they call it a religious experience. So a religious experience is when you have a moment of experience transcendence. So we all have those moments. Even in our beginning stages, in the beginning of our education, in this supreme king of all educations, we have those moments that we experience transcendence, we experience Krishna, we experience his reciprocation. So, and as we advance, the experience becomes greater and greater and greater, till one point when we achieve perfection, that we have this complete realization of our spiritual self. Is the seven treasure that is given by the process of chanting the holy name. What is it? Anandan buddhi vardhanam pratipadam purnam vritashvanam sarvatmas napanam. Sarvatmas napanam. So we have this full experience of the self by realization. The seven treasure. So that's what is called self-realization. And that's the goal of life, to come to that point. My Guru Maharaj once told me, when I was telling him about this moment or this religious experience that I have in the very, very beginning of my Krishna conscious practice, the first 9 months that I have in Krishna consciousness, I used to go to chant in the street with Aindra Prabhu in his truck, and I have this moment that there was this sense of all of a sudden I was not in the space that I was in some other space, and there was this sense of great happiness and satisfaction just by chanting. And it was a very short moment. And then I described it to my Guru Maharaj at that time. And he says that Krishna just gave me a drop of the happiness of the soul. I just tasted a drop of the happiness of the soul. And then he said this thing that I it was very impactful for myself. He said, imagine that moment, that tiny moment, 24/7. Then he said, that is the life of a spirit soul. 24/7 on that space of complete happiness, ananda, anandam buddhi vardhanam, 24/7 being like that. And then one time, my Guru Maharaj was coming out of his room, and then he stopped and he started to stare at this painting or this poster of Krishna. And then he stood there for a while, and then I was behind him, and then he turned to me with a big smile and he say, "Won't you like to be there?" And it was the picture of, remember, there's this picture of Vrindavan, and then the cowherd boys running. They're all like running, very happy, behind Krishna and Balaram, who's running in the front with the cows. You remember that picture? It's one of the pictures that are depicting all the cowherd boys running among the trees, and then Krishna and Balaram in the front together. They're running. So, yes. So my Guru Maharaj was saying, "Wouldn't you like to be there, just like having fun with Krishna in Vrindavan?" So, that is the perfection. And that's what we aspire to. That's what we're heading towards. That is the goal. And Srila Prabhupada finished with this. He quotes the beautiful prayers of the Sat Goswamis that describes Vrindavan. Kuja kokila hamsa sarasa gana kirne majura kule nana ratna divada mula vitapa Sri Yukta Vrindavane Radha Krishna Maharnisham Pravajato Jivarta Doja Muda Bande Rupa Sanatana Ragujago Sri Jiva Gopalako. In Vrindavan, which is resonant with the calls of cuckoo birds, swans and cranes, filled with peacocks, and beautified by trees decorated with various jewels at their base, they serve Radha and Krishna day and night and joyfully fulfill all souls' desires. I offer my obeisances to Sri Rupa, Sri Sanatan, Sri Raghunath Bhatta, Sri Raghunath Das, Sri Jiva and Sri Gopal. With the description of Vrindavan. So Prabhupada quotes this because there's this different birds and animals that live in the land of Vrindavan, and part of the games of the children was to imitate them and imitate the sounds. When you go to Vrindavan and you go, you have the fortune of being taken around wonderful devotee, Dinabandhu Prabhu. He mastered all the different sounds. So he tells you, "Oh, this bird sounds like this, the cuckoo bird sounds like this, so he imitates all the different sounds and knows all the different flowers and the different trees. He recognizes all this tree is this one, this tree is that one." So it's wonderful to go to Vrindavan and experience the beauty. And the beautiful thing of going to Vrindavan is, you really, the only way to experience the beauty of Vrindavan is that you are taken by a devotee. When you are under the shelter of a devotee and the guidance, then you have entrance into this sweetness, and you're able to taste. If you don't have that, then it becomes a very difficult experience. It's not that sweet. Then, you know, you experience the external Vrindavan, not the internal Vrindavan. Any comments or questions? Yes, Raktak Prabhu. Wait for the microphone. People here in the internet.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj said the same thing that you just mentioned about, you know, that you have to have a certain attitude when you go to these different, you know, holy sites, different, you know, spiritual places. He said if you have a different, like a mundane, materialistic attitude, you won't, you know, experience any of the, you know, higher tastes.
Yes, you won't have entrance to it.
Yeah, he explained that, and he kept, you know, repeating that. When I went on the yatra, he said that to everybody. So
it's wonderful to go in yatra with your spiritual master, no?
Yeah.
It becomes experience that is... It's those times in which you are actually 24/7 absorbed in Krishna Katha, in Krishna's pastime. There's no break. And specifically with our Guru Maharaj, is that he's organized that there is no break.
It's non-stop.
It's non-stop Krishna Katha, it's non-stop absorption. And the fact is that it's tremendous. It's like, you know, it's you're in...
He manifested himself as a superhuman entity. I mean, like you said, he was like tireless. He would go place to place.
Yeah.
I mean, and we would go through villages to different places, and he would tell us we'd have to keep up with him, or we'll get lost, you know, in the clouds and stuff. And when he'd get up, you know, get out of his car, we'd get off the buses, and he'd get out of the little white car. And he would disappear into the crowds, and we'd have to rush real fast to keep up with him. Place to place.
Nice. Thanks, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you for your advice. You mentioned that verse from chapter 9, and you were kind of speaking about that a few times, of this knowledge is confidential. And what came to mind is two quotes. One, knowledge is power, and a quote from Spider-Man. With great power comes great responsibility. And that's what we're expected to do by being members of the Disciples Succession. Take the knowledge ourselves and give it to others. And we see it in Bhagavatam, there are essentially two types of personalities, mediators and deviators. Mediators put Krishna in the spotlight. Deviators put themselves in the spotlight, sometimes in the name of Krishna consciousness. Of course, we've all gone through that in our Tinabriti stage, but one thing that came to mind is my favorite analogy is that same thing, when a computer is connected to its power source, it could benefit itself, or if we're connected to the, you know, the internet, we could benefit ourselves, and we could benefit others. But if a computer is disconnected from its power source, we cannot either benefit ourselves nor others. Same if we become a deviator, we can't benefit ourselves or others. So one thing that came to mind that Krishna says in that particular verse, he told Arjuna, the reason I'm giving you this confidential knowledge, it's because you are not envious. And basically, we see throughout the Bhagavatam, the standard of whether we determine whether we're mediators or deviators to see if we're not envious. And one pastime that came to mind is Lord Brahma. Two pastimes. In the first chapter of the Krishna book, it describes that Lord Brahma was the primary mediator. When Mother Bhumi came to Lord Brahma, she said, "My dear Brahma, the world is overburdened by demons. Can you please help me?" So Lord Brahma says, yes, I'm the proper mediator. I'll talk to my superior and go in deep meditation and see what he says. But before Lord Brahma actually went to the ocean of milk and prayed to Lord Vishnu, the other demigods tried to summon the Lord to see what they would get inspired. So it's described, Prabhupada, in the first chapter of Krishna book, the Advent of Lord Krishna. So Prabhupada says, the demigods offered their Purusha Shukta prayers to Lord Vishnu with all their heart. They heard no response. Nothing. The Lord didn't talk to them. However, when Brahma did the same thing after the demigods, he heard a response. You know, so he could have been thinking, I must be like the chosen one, a mediator. So therefore, it's my responsibility. But actually, there's another pastime where Brahma was humbled. When he entered the city of Dwarka to meet Lord Krishna, he says, "Kasi Lord Krishna to the doorkeeper." And the doorkeeper says, "Prabhu, which Brahma are you?" "What do you mean, which Brahma am I? I'm the chosen one. I'm the greatest mediator. You know, everyone else is a deviator. That's why the Lord considers me special." So then when he met Lord Krishna, Lord Krishna says, "Actually, you're not the only mediator. There's so many mediators that's way better than you." So one thing I appreciate about this lesson is that we could really test whether we're a mediator or a deviator when somebody's glorified, you know, other than us. That's why Martin Luther King says, nobody is unhappy about praise, even if they know they don't deserve it, and even if they don't believe it. The only people who are unhappy about praise is when that praise is going too much towards somebody else. And this is precisely what we're about. So my question regarding this topic is that a lot of times people say, "I'm not a leader. What is the point of representing the disciple succession? Because everyone has their nature, their Varnashram Dharma, and I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a public speaker." But we see the first lesson in Nectar Instruction, it describes that how can one be a leader? And it does say if you control your speech,
get further.
If you control your speech and your mind, etc., then you could make disciples all over the world. But it also says before you make disciples all over the world, before you're a leader of people, you have to be a leader of your senses. So sometimes the tendency is that if I'm not a speaker, if I don't give class, then the tendency is, why should I read the books? Because that's not my dharma. And therefore we see that if you ask anybody, how many years you've been a Krishna consciousness? Have you read the entire Srimad Bhagavatam? Have you read the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita? And the usual answer I've seen is no. Not even I've read the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm on the 10th canto, but still, it's not like you read it and you understand. But still, Krishna gives you mercy if you try. So one thing, my question is that what are some steps we can move forward to gain the realization that we're actually not a leader of people, but we're actually a leader of our senses? Because I'll mention one last quote from the Bible. It says everyone is a leader. There's a nice verse from the Bible. It says everyone is a leader. It compares the body to a boat and our tongue to a rudder. So I basically paraphrased it both because the word leadership comes up in this verse. And the word leadership consists of two words, leader and ship. Everyone is a leader, the captain of their ship, the body, with a rudder, the tongue, that steers us either to the island of our elevation or steers us to the iceberg of our degradation, depending whether we contemplate words of wisdom or words of wrath. So we see the tendencies that if I'm not a public speaker, why should I read the books? But then we see people find fault with others. But have you read the entire Bhagavatam? So why are you finding fault with others? And therefore, we are not inclined to be leaders because how do we redefine the new definition of what a true leader is? It's not being on a Bhagavatam and studying. It's actually studying for your own purification, because if we're not a leader of ourselves, if we're not a leader of envy, then we'll be a follower of envy. Same with all the most material nature, if we're not a leader. So can you explain some of that a little bit?
The answer is very simple for us that is being given. The definition is what, you know, Srila Rupa Goswami is telling us, what Srila Prabhupada has explained to us, what the acharyas tell us. And we can understand how to be a leader and how to recognize a leader. What are the qualifications of a leader? And when we have that understanding, then we have and we're being guided to be introspective and self-aware, then we always have the sense that, you know, I'm serving my leader or my spiritual master. I have someone, I have people that I'm taking shelter of. So that is the education that we're receiving. Now, the descriptions that you made in the question is these people say that people say, you know, or even maybe devotees may say that these are displays of some of immaturity in Krishna consciousness when things are like that, when that type of conflicts, and maybe not conflicts but questioning comes like that, is signs of immaturity in Krishna consciousness, when people are putting down others or displaying some enviousness or that type of thing, is signs of immaturity. So we can just understand it as it is. And in terms of ourselves, we can also see that, you know, if we are disturbed, or if it's disturbing us, someone's, or the immaturity, or this display of immaturity in Krishna consciousness, it means that I also have something to do. So if I focus on myself, again, the theme of being introspective, then I attend to the parts of myself that are also immature and try to, you know, my spiritual master says something, when your mind is going like, you know, disturbed, then you have to take a moment off and reconnect with your spiritual reality. And what is our spiritual reality? We remember what we study, what we read, you know, what's the type of position of a devotee. You connect back to the spiritual reality. I'm a servant and I'm in the shelter of my spiritual master and Krishna and the acharyas. And then, you know, you proceed. So it's the process of reconnecting ourselves to our spiritual reality when we get pulled into that space that is of you know, materialistic external views of things. I mean, if something tells you, oh, I see that you're not a public speaker, you should not read the books. I mean, what kind of, it's like, you know, maybe. Yes, I'm saying, so if someone says that, you know, then, like right now, we're listening to that and we say, oh, that's very silly. is not a very intelligent, you know, without knowing the background, you know, like externally appears to be very silly. So, you know, why you should become disturbed about something that is silly? Now, if I become disturbed, then I have to say, okay, why am I disturbed? Why is this disturbing me? What is it? You know, so then we start to dig in ourselves. Oh, maybe it's because I'm proud, or I have some pride of what I'm doing, right? We look at something, or what, I don't know, maybe something else. And then you say, okay, I have to remember that, you know, what my spiritual master told me, what Prabhupada tells me, you know, so it's fine for me to, you know, I mean, it's reading the books is my lifeline, so, you know, it's my devotional service. So, you know, like that, you reconnect to the spiritual reality, but I have to address this, whatever is there that makes me react and makes me lose my spiritual ground, you know. So you address that, so you start to work on that, you know. And that's my particular realization. I mean, it's easy to say it, but that's the process of purification that we have to go through. In one sense, it's very wonderful, and we're very grateful about it, that Krishna gave us, and our Guru Maharaj gave us, you know, the capacity to experience this discomfort of our material condition. It's a great sign when we experience discomfort. And when we experience this conflict, this discomfort, then that's a great, okay, what's wrong here? You know, let me find what's wrong, you know, inside here. If we feel that, you know, we just go with the, you know, like materialistic people, you just hit back, you know, and it's a struggle, which one is stronger, you know? So, we don't want to be on that, so. Super short, because I want to finish on time.
I agree with you. I don't think anyone, first of all, will go to a devotee and say, you're not a public speaker, don't read the books. But I'm referring to our mind that generally tells us, not blatantly, but...
Oh, I see.
But the tendency is that if you're going to perform a play, you're going to read the script. But if you're not going to perform a particular play, you're not going to read the script. So the tendency is, if we're not put in public, then it's much difficult to read the script of Krishna consciousness, the scripture of right. Krishna consciousness, and then we're kind of a slaves to the script of Maya,
right,
the
right.
modes. So how does one get the impetus? I think that's why it's very, my personal opinion is that why it's important to encourage everyone to somehow or other give some preaching program, do some preaching type of thing. It may not be on a Bhagavatam, but some type of thing. That way you won't, if you don't read the books and you have to be a public speaker, you like, okay, let me read the books so I'm going to embarrass myself. So that's why I feel like that should be encouraged. I don't know if it's encouraged enough, but then we see that people, generally speaking, I mean, I could speak for myself. I'll just speak for myself. Before I got serious about reading the books, I thought I was enlightened. I knew every circumstance, what they were thinking, what they were doing, their fault, that fault. You know, and that way I was finding no bliss. Yeah. But when I, you know, got serious, when I got initiated, I had to get serious. Then I feel like, oh, it's more bliss, you know, worrying about my own faults, like you said, than others' faults. And I could therefore navigate my ship in a proper direction. So that was my question. How do you get the impetus, and should there be more encouragement for people to give public, some type of public speak? Otherwise, you don't read the script. But then we see that, generally speaking, oh, you're so enlightened. You know everyone's faults. You know everyone's doing. You know everyone's thinking. Just like I did. That's the tendency. It's Kali Yuga. We have to be realistic. That goes on. So that's what I meant kind of in that.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, so, yeah, the mind is true, you know. The mind is right now, in our conditioned state, Krishna says, that our worst enemy. So there's an enemy there that is sort of reflecting all our vulnerabilities, and also sometimes it tries to make all these obstacles. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's advice: in the morning with a shoe and in the evening with a broomstick, we beat the mind. In one sense, we have to be trained. We train ourselves to when we see that the mind is giving us a lot of conflict, we're conflicted, then that's when we stop. That's what my spiritual master said. When you see that the whole thing is going like, oh, then step back and reconnect. And where do we find that reconnection? Is the shelter that we have of reading Prabhupada's books, studying, and following the instructions of the devotees, of spiritual masters. So we got that shelter. That's a beauty that we have as devotees. We do have a shelter. So reconnecting to our shelter is what settles us down. So we continue doing that. It's important. And when we do that, naturally, I mean, when you are in that space of shelter and you start to, especially taking shelter of instructions and studying, the natural propensities that you want to share, you find ways of sharing, isn't it? You know, maybe not in this way, you know, in this way of sitting in a vyasasan, but you do find ways of sharing. You actually, when you receive something, and it's something that is makes you happy and then enlivens you, you find ways of sharing it with other people. You find ways. It's a natural thing. So, just by the principle of cultivating knowledge, the natural thing for most people is just to share it. And so the answer to the question is just continue, is what we're given, the process, Nityam Bhagavata Sevayam. And if we do that, you know, Nastra Prayeshavadeshu. So all the unwanted things just like keep being destroyed, you know. So we continue in the process like that, faithfully. And as you continue, as you say, that's the science of a leader. As the unwanted things goes, we have more control of the self. And then naturally, you don't even have to ask for it. People will look up to you because they see, you know, someone who is serious about
it. Thank you, Prabhu. Retaking a bit of the class at the beginning when you were talking about the Konukos and how we played and our vacations and stuff, it seems long. It's for sure that a simpler life brings more joy than the more complicated leisure time and the kids, especially in the urban lives. In social media, permanently, we see these kids in Africa and in India and in South America playing with whatever they find and turn them into something that they relate with, a car that is a piece of block, a 2x4 or a brake or something.
A tire.
Yeah, and and they go to the creeks and catch crab and tadpoles and snakes.
No need for details on that.
And we were both out of Godhead. We don't. Now, what is extraordinary expression of kids that are poor, which is terrible. It is terrible. I was relating all what you said. I lived it too. And it was like innocence. And we were creative. And we were always cooperating one another. And when we have competences, it was a healthy one. It wasn't that we were trying to push one down or to, no, there were girls like anywhere else, no. But it was that extraordinary nowadays, extraordinary simple life. We have to go back to the simple life again to understand those things that the people don't understand anymore. That's all I want to say.
Yeah. Well, real life is a life of goodness. Yeah. It's what Patraka describes of his two children. They run wild, super happy in the farm. So there's no question of